We woke up now, and it's about 10:30. It's close to 10:30 here on the final day, Saturday, of day three of the Midwest Magic Jubilee. And getting ready to go into hear a lecture by, who is it that's going to be at 10:30? Oh, it's Richard Turner. That's right. It's going to be on there. And I've got good friends from Australia over here, Steve Walker and Bill Walsh. Good to hear see you guys.
G'day, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Steve? Good. I am. Having a great time.
Now, these guys sound alike, I know, so it's...
Not quite.
That has the accent. They're the ones who, you know, are talking properly.
I never had an accent till I came here.
And then you have to get a drawl. You know, you have to say y'all and that kind of a thing, you know.
Well, New Orleans.
Yeah.
I was born in England, so, you know, we invented the language. You guys just screwed it up. You know?
But then you left England then to go to Australia.
A short while ago, 43 years.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of staying, but I'm still on a British passport.
Still on a British passport. So. Now, does that mean that you can only work there for so long and then head back?
Yeah, 45 years.
He's been there for 43 years, and 42 of them we've been trying to send him back.
Well, we've had a couple of days now, and I just wanted to kind of get you guys a snapshot. Excuse me. I know sometimes that you're actually working at a convention. And Steve, sometimes you're emceeing and doing, you know, bits and everything, and here you're just kind of relaxing and enjoying
it. Yeah.
As both of us are all going to be going to the Magic Live here, you know, soon. And then, Bill, that you actually competed in the close-up and everything then. So, but I just wanted to get your idea kind of as a, just a registrant of what have you thought so far, the last couple of days of the convention. How have you been enjoying it?
I think it's been great. I think it's a good convention.
Highlights, lowlights, any things that stick out? Comments?
The only lowlights to me, I think they all have trouble with their camera work. So I've got to get a convention where the camera work is good.
Yeah.
This is our fourth convention in the last couple of weeks, and the whole four conventions of camera work has been bad. But I'd love to see a good camera work. You know,
not a magician's forte, I guess. You know.
They don't seem to marry them off together.
No, not very well. Thoughts, Steve?
The talent is particularly good from our point of view, especially.
Yeah, Scott Wells.
I can edit that out later.
The talent is good from our point of view because we have been to a lot of conventions. I mean, we come across here nearly every year. And they keep booking the same acts, you know. Whereas Americans don't seem to travel around to conventions. They'll stick with the ones in their area. Mm-hmm. We tend to look for conventions with acts that we've heard of but never seen. And this is quite good from that point of view. I mean, we have seen two or three of them before, and it's nice to meet old friends. But there's been a lot of good acts that we haven't seen. So,
well, like Andrew Goldenhirsch last night.
Well, yeah, funnily enough, we were looking forward to Andrew, but as we came in through Los Angeles, we called in the Magic Castle,
and he was
on in the parlor. So that's sort
the same
of,
act, yeah,
that
exactly.
sort of ruined it a little bit for us. But no, this has been good. It's been very friendly. I think the facilities have been good, and the hotel staff's been great. I mean, you can't fault them. Yeah,
it has been very good, top-notch. Yeah. I think the lectures have been pretty good. You know, a lot of fun then also.
Yeah. I think the late-night ones, and this is true of a previous convention we've been to, the late-night one that starts at 11:30, I think they should start it a little bit earlier. Because the attendance is way down on those.
It is.
And it shouldn't be, really, because they have been excellent lectures.
Very good. Yeah. I went to hear Simon Lovell last night, and actually I took a nap before I went to go hear his lecture, make sure
exactly.
I could stay. It was really good, and he was up until 1 o'clock, and my thing was until 1 o'clock, and it just is... Maybe we start earlier in the day or something.
Well,
I don't know.
This one is good in that if you stopped up till 1 o'clock or half past 1 last night, at least, you know, the first thing you want to see is Richard Turner at 10:30, which ain't too bad. You can sleep in. Whereas one of the other conventions, we were sort of going to bed late, getting up early. That you can keep up with that. I mean, when we were all younger, we could stop up till 4 o'clock in the morning and still get up for 7. But now that's nearly impossible. So you've got to decide. But so I think it's been pretty good. The scheduling has been pretty good. But I'd just start that a little bit earlier. Probably the dealers won't agree because they've, you know. They like to get people in late at night. But I've enjoyed this one. It's been great. Looking forward to today and particularly tonight's show.
Who's on tonight's show?
Well, Eric Buss finishes as only he can, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to finish because he's got another show next March.
Sean's on as well.
Sean Farquhar.
Yeah.
And there's somebody else we haven't seen. Oh, is Eugene on tonight?
Yeah, no, he was on the first night.
Oh, he was on the first night, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter, who's on the show tonight, Peter?
Yep, got Peter Rogers over here also.
Yeah, he's in the close-up show this afternoon.
No, for the evening main show tonight.
So, tonight's main show, hang on, I've got it here. Dropping everything. Chris Raymond is the MC. Eric Buss, he'll be the closer, I think. Sean Farquhar, Paul Gertner.
That's right, no. Paul Gertner's going to be on tonight.
We have
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the MC for tonight.
No.
I don't think I've seen him before either. So I agree, it's kind of nice to have some people who, you know, at the convention that you haven't seen them before. Now, you guys said you've been to four of the conventions before this?
Yeah.
Tell me, where were you? Which else?
Well, we started at Pittsburgh SAM, and then we went up to Vancouver for Sean's Canadian convention.
PCAM, yeah.
And the combined Canadian and PCAM.
Yeah.
And then we went over to Colon for Abbott's.
Oh, yeah.
And then we came here.
And then to Magic Live.
And then to Magic Live. Right, and then back to the castle, and then home.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys lead a magic life.
Well, too much magic's really not enough, is it,
Scott? Now, how many guys are on the magic crew from the Land of Oz?
There's four of us have been traveling together through the entire bit. Okay. There were about another...
There's about 16 we worked out that would be at Magic Life that we know of. There could be a couple of others that creep in that we're not sure, but there's about 16 that will be at Magic Live.
We look forward to Magic Live because the last three Magic Lives, as you know, have been
awesome.
Spectacular.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to beat. I'm sure he sold out and then he got more room and then opened it up and everything. I've made every odd one. I've got the first, third, and fifth. I missed the second and the fourth one. So, but yeah, they have all been good and I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So you're going to be getting done with conventions, Magic Conventions, I guess, for this year?
No, when we get back to Sydney, there's the local dealer there, Sean Taylor. He has a convention, a two-day convention, 2.5 days, really. And then there's one in Adelaide in October. So, yeah, it's a good year for conventions.
Now, what about... Go ahead.
We had our own convention only 6 weeks before we came over here.
What was that called?
That's the GenieCon convention. We had Stephen Bagatze and Rick Merrill over from America, and we had a great convention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I was going to ask about attendance at those conventions. How big are they in Australia?
Oh, not very big. We're looking now... because
100?
No, not even that. You know, if we can get 100 there, that's considered... pretty good, you know.
We used to get 300s, but things have changed. People don't come to conventions as much as they used to.
Right.
And we've noticed it over here as well, too. I mean, you take IBM and SAM, we've been coming here since the early 80s.
Sure.
And they used to get over 1,000 every year to IBM and SAM. Now they're getting between 400 and 600.
The last time, I was the president of the Texas Association of Magicians in 2000, and we had about 1,200 registrants. And since then, attendance has gone down. That was the last time we had over 1,000. I mean, we've been having 600, 800, 700, you know, maybe a 900, but it's really been falling off. I think this year they had about 700. That's coming in San Antonio, for this convention.
Stan Allen seems to be the only one who can sell out his conventions.
That's true. Well, he has a lot of stuff going on that's in addition to just the convention. Yeah. I mean, it's an attractive place. I mean, Las Vegas is a magic city, and a lot of other shows to see. He leaves you time to go and see the afternoon or evening shows.
But now, people just hanging out, being
there is kind of cool.
Not as many as there used to be, is it? Even Magic on the Strip now is, the number of shows that there used to be years ago.
And the funny thing, too, someone had mentioned to me just yesterday that you're hearing of names of younger people who seem to come and go. They don't have the staying power.
No.
That, let's say, Siegfried and Roy or Lance Burton and some others. There's been some other guys, maybe like Luke Germain or others who've kind of come and gone, had a show or it seemed kind of good. Right now, Paul Vigil has a small show, and I hope that lasts, for a long time. Excellent performer. I want to see him in his element out there. I've seen him perform several times, but not there.
Yeah, I'd like to see him. It seems a strange venue, though. It's a
tattoo parlor.
Parlor.
Yeah, exactly. How much more intimate can that be?
Yeah.
You got to speak over the zzzz,
That'd be good. Yeah.
So, you guys are having a great time, going to be heading back. And
meeting lots of good friends that we've met over the years. It seems, sometimes it's just home away from home. It seems like we come, we meet them, they pick us up,
Yeah.
We really find them friendly. It's great.
Well, you know, that shows you the scope of this convention, that this really is a friendly convention. I was talking with Terry Richardson last night, who is the president. He was saying that Bill Malone had made that very comment, that he likes to come and hang out, because he said this is about the friendliest convention of people just kind of hanging out. But I think in most parts, when you get to a smaller regional convention like this, that they're, you know, friends. And we kind of, you know, have been coming back after a number of years. And I start to see, I would say also that this is an older generation who attends this convention, as opposed to, say, like Magic Con. You know, some of the other conventions. I think Magic Live transcends generations. I think you'll probably see all ages who are going to be there, again, because it's in Las Vegas. But there are a lot of guys who are coming here. I'm not saying that this is, you know, for old people. You know, I think people who are younger are coming in or having, you know, booking good acts and everything. But
I think you're right that there's a lot of people at these conventions who have been coming for a long time and they know one another.
Sure.
But the thing I like about it is that they also welcome people like us. You know, we come in and they're just as friendly with us. You know, like the people at Abbott's took us to every party in the world you could imagine. And it's just about the same every convention you go to. I mean, at the end of the Canadian convention, we went to their picnic. They took us and we had a great time at their picnic after the convention. So that's the thing I like about it, is that they're all so friendly, these little...
Would you say the guys in Australia are the same way? You
know, without doubt. Yeah.
I got to come over sometime.
We'd love to have you, Scott.
I was... last time I was there was, I want to say, 99 or something. It was a long time ago. In fact, years ago, talk about conventions, a Graham Etherington, I think it was, who had asked me about coming over and performing. And then I think there was some financial crisis, and they said, you know, we need to cut back, and so we can't afford to bring over people, you know, that we were going to have. And I said, okay, that's fine. And they started charging more for the hall or whatever. This would have been in, like, in the mid-90s or something, I think. But they won't want to come back again.
The good news on this trip, for all of us, is that the IBM and the SCM are getting together again in
14
for the
with Sean Farquhar and Mark Whitehouse
for this combined convention.
Right,
and we think that's great because the last one
in Louisville
was spectacular.
You attended that one as well.
And
what made that spectacular? What stood out?
The venue, for a start off, that venue in Louisville was great with the big atrium.
The golf house.
I mean, there was somewhere to go every night. There was people to see. There were plenty of places to sit. The program was great. You know, they had other things like, you know, the paddle boat on the river. So if St. Louis in 2014 is half as good, it'll be great. You know, we really enjoy it.
I talked with Sean about this yesterday, kind of in length, and he was just real excited. While he was here, he was looking at the hotel they're going to be having and whatnot, and the theater, and he is excited, and you know, you can feel that enthusiasm.
So we're looking forward to Fizzing now next year. So
That should be fun.
The next trip.
Well, good. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. Talking over here then with Peter Rogers.
Thank you.
Good night.
Or wherever you are. Is Steve Walker?
Good night. Good morning.
And also then Bill Walsh.
Goodbye. Love you all.
And one last thing, that this my podcast is called The Magic Word. So let me ask each of you guys, what is your magic word? What is the magic word in your life? Peter, what's your magic word?
Books.
Books. I like that.
You mean a magic word to use in an act, or
not necessarily? What is, when you think of a magic word, you know,
just friends around the world. It's great.
Friends,
And you don't have to speak the language.
Friends.
We all speak
like
the same language.
Speak magic.
Know,
That's right, Bill.
My wife. I hope she's listening.
You'll have to tune in. Tell her to tune in and listen. All righty. Well, there you have it, guys. Thanks a lot, Scotty. Out. The sounds you're hearing now are those of the 10 fingers of. I should say 10 tiny fingers of Howie Schwartzman on the piano in the lobby. Howie Schwartzman at the piano.
Awesome. You should go on tour.
Very good, Howie. Thank you very much. Very good.
Yeah.
I was just recording a little bit of that over there. Howie Schwartzman over there.
How about that?
For the podcast. The magic word. What is your magic word? What is your magic word? If you were to say...
I can't use that in public.
So did you take piano lessons as a child, or natural? You just natural talent, or did you take lessons as a child?
No, natural.
Yep. Since you were how old?
My mother and her sister both played by ear.
Oh, yeah?
Thank you.
So did you ever play like at in the bar or restaurant or something, kind of like as
no,
a you lounge?
No, play for myself.
Just for yourself only?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like my wife. She played, but just for her own.
Well, my wife plays with me.
The lovely strains of Howie Schwartzman. Gonna let this fade into the background as we head over and get ready to, don't want to miss Richard Turner's excellent lecture coming up here now at 10:30. It's about that time. Scotty out. All right, we are...
That work?
We are live. That's good, Don. Yes. You're just finishing lunch over here. Don Weiber. Hey, Don Weiber.
No.
Tell me, what do you think about the convention so far? How have you been enjoying it?
I think we're having a great time, and Terry Richardson and company have gone out of their way to make us. Great talent, great shows, excellent lectures, and really, it's a, you know, as they say, one of the best, and I've been coming here for years and years and years and years.
And small also. You know, I think it's an intimate type of convention.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Get to hang out with guys like Eric Buss.
Yep.
Oh, hi, Eric.
He's still happy to be over here then, too.
Who are you?
I'll never forget what's his name.
And David, let me ask you then also that we're here for the podcast. David, how do you pronounce your last name?
DeCenzo.
DeCenzo.
But he can't pronounce where he's from.
But I can't pronounce
Muscuta. I know
Muscuta.
No, it's Muscatu.
Muscatu.
Well, that's the part about it is getting to hang around and have lunch with people like, well, Scott Wells, and Dan Wilberg, and Eric Buss, and where else can you do that?
Where's Dan Wilberg? I think it's Don Weiberg, but he just like, oh, I'm only kidding. David, I got to go. I'm getting all sticky.
Okay. Yep, because it's about time for Sean Farquhar's lecture over here shortly. You've been coming then for years since you don't live so very far away, then, actually, then, David.
I've been coming for years. This is the first time I've ever been, yes.
Really? Is this your first time?
I haven't been doing magic for very long,
okay.
So this is kind of a new thing for me.
So you're learning a lot of things, meeting a lot of people, and having a great time?
Amazing, a lot of stuff. Everybody you talk to in the hallway has a new take on an old gag or something going on. So, yeah. I've been getting little tidbits I can use over and over again the whole time I've been here. So this
just kind of like what you were talking about a while ago. We got the Professor's Nightmare, the Awakened, from Dan Harlan, and he was walking by, so he just got a few extra personal tips.
Where else can you have a quick 5-minute lesson from the inventor of the effect?
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. So, it's the kind of thing that makes you want to come back next year and the year after and all that kind
of
thing.
There you go.
It's all downhill from here. You're screwed.
And then also over here we have Eric Buss. Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And so you're from Tucson.
Originally from Tucson. I've been living in L.A. for 13 years now.
Why'd you move to L.A.? Because everybody else was going to Vegas, and you thought, okay, well, now there's a void, there's a sucking.
Yes.
There's a bunch of magicians.
It sucked me in.
Okay.
L.A. usually sucks you in and doesn't let go. Actually, I was pursuing acting as well, and a lot of my college actor friends moved to L.A. The Magic Castle was a big part of it. Mm-hmm. It seemed very entertainment center. So I did move there for the entertainment industry, but over Vegas because I grew up in Tucson and wanted to get out of the heat, and Vegas is worse. And I like the ocean. So all those things together.
So you happened to be in the right place, but was it the right time? Do you feel like that it was a good time? I mean, as far as making that transition?
Well, I didn't really have
a choice. Did you go right straight out of college?
Right out of college. I didn't have a choice on timing, because had I had a choice, I probably would have been born in the vaudeville era or the early Johnny Carson era.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. I've heard a lot of people say that.
Yeah. Timing was okay, but it's been fun in L.A., and I've loved it there, and, you know, just hanging out at the Magic Castle all the time, like here. You get lessons from the big names, or just hang out with them and chat, or inspiration, or get bookings, you know, just because you're in a conversation with somebody.
I like that. The castle is so cool because so many different people show up that you're not expecting. The very first time I was working there for a week in the early 80s, and different people from all across the country that I was expecting to just see some guys from L.A. who stopped in, but, you know, there were so many people who had come through. It's like, hey, what are you doing? Well, just in town, you know.
Yep. And celebrities come and watch and maybe hire you for a private party or something, lots of friends coming through. And
now, do you find the castle a place that you can also kind of work out new material, or not? Or is that some place you feel like you can only do your A stuff?
I do. I try not to make it too crappy in the beginning.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And definitely surrounded by stronger material. But I try to have something new every time I perform there. But to me, something new could be one line.
Sure,
or a quick gag or in addition to an existing routine. But I do try to have something new every time I work there. Yeah. And they are supportive with that as long as it's
strong.
Professional quality and strong and,
yeah.
and you know, works and fits. And but they were an example. When I wanted to debut my Spring Snakes there, originally, Brian Lee, the stage manager, is a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. and I had called him and asked him what the dimensions of the ramp were that went to the stage, because okay. my prop was already bigger.
It's a big organ thing.
It's a
yeah.
big, giant prop.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so he told me the dimensions, and my thing was too big to even perform at my favorite place, at the castle.
Huh.
And I thought, that I can't. I got to change it so I can work it there. So I did alter it and shrunk it down a little, but I did go in a few times, showed Brian what the prop was, showed them how high the snake shot, you know, made sure it wasn't going to hit the lights or anything.
Right.
And so to do this new routine, to break it in that week, I did my research because I didn't want to just barge in with some giant thing and say,
work.
Hey, everybody, I'm going to do this
yeah.
right. So they were very supportive when I did bring it in, and they helped me out, get it on the stage and this and that, and it did very well that first week, the audience response. But had I brought it in and not told anyone, I think it could have caused problems just logistically.
Yeah, that reminds me of when they had Magic Week on David Letterman
yep.
show, you know, a while back, and they had a different magician each night.
Yep.
And the one I thought did the best over there was Steve Cohen. Now, Steve lives in New York, and of course, he went in and did his research.
Yes.
And so he went into the afternoon to kind of sit in the chair and, you know, ask if he could, you know, do all this. So he had a good idea of where the camera angles were going to be.
Yep.
And so he kind of knew going in, and it wasn't cold. I know some of the other guys walked in, and it was their first time, and,
right.
and they weren't expecting this or that, and didn't look as good as I think Steve did, you know,
yep.
For that. So I think it's good to kind of set your battlefield, as Slagini always said.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And regarding the Letterman thing, I did it, it wasn't Magic Week, I just did my own thing. And because my prop and routine were kind of self-contained and just, it's a routine to music, so it was easier for me. But for those close-up magicians, having now known the battlefield, as you said, knowing what they are going through, you know, a few years later watching Magic Week, you could tell who had done the research and who didn't. And even to all their credit, it's an extremely difficult performing situation, especially with Letterman sitting right there. And I thought Amar did really well, and John Carney, because they can relax and
sure.
listen to what he is saying. He's going to say a joke.
And react.
And you can react and enjoy it. And you cannot be defensive or on guard, or he will destroy you. And
yeah.
so that is, yeah, I mean, the best ones were at ease.
But did you meet him before in order to for him to put you at ease, or was it like...
No, in fact, you do not meet him before the show.
Kind of like with Johnny Carson, what I've heard.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. He doesn't want to set up any information, any conversation or anything, and because my thing was to music...
Spontaneity, a little bit,
yep.
what he wants, okay.
So he will not meet him before the show. In fact, we asked, my wife and I, when we were there, we asked one of the interns that was helping me throughout the day, you know, we said, oh, can we get a quick photo with David before the show? And there were two people that worked for the show standing right there. And in unison, they both went, nope, that's not going to happen. He shows up. It's clockwork. He's been doing it for 30 years. He shows up at showtime. He's got his cue cards. He knows his jokes from probably emails or phone calls
right.
with writers. But he sits at his desk and he delivers jokes. He's been doing it for 30 years. He doesn't need to know anything.
Right.
So he knew some guy was going to come on and shoot snakes, and he had his intro, but he didn't need to meet me. He didn't need to do anything with me. So no, he shows up, does the show, and as soon as the show's over, he's gone. So unless you are interviewed by him, where he meets you on camera on TV, you do not meet him. And because mine was a musical performance off on the stage, he waved at me, he introduced me, then he, you know, stood and applauded for me, but that meant I never met him. Yeah.
Interesting. So you never got that picture?
Never got the picture, and I guarantee the close-up entertainers that he had on that week met him right then and there,
right.
and not before or not after.
Interesting. My little speaking of talk shows, the thing I did, the talk show the other night, I had talked with Paul Gardner about how that he got on Johnny Carson. He was saying persistence. He kept, contacting him until finally, he tried a different angle. On the other hand, complete different end of the spectrum in which Sean Farquhar was on the Ellen show, and they had contacted him, and he thought it was a joke, and, so it was kind of funny from the standpoint that he didn't even think they were serious about it until he actually talked with them and said, yeah, we want you, next week. So my question is, do you fall in between, or how did you, New York and L.A. are a long way apart, obviously.
Yes. I do fall in between, and I think I think what you can take away from that, from Paul's story, Sean's, mine, and anyone else's, is there are no set rules as to how to get on TV. It happens differently for everybody. Ellen does find a lot of people on YouTube, and I mean, that's a crapshoot for that entertainer. They don't know that she's watching their YouTube videos. However, the old method does work. You send a video of your act and a letter saying who you are and what you do and make it short and sweet because they are so busy. It worked for me, and people still watch DVDs, and people, especially in the entertainment industry, everything's turning to website and email, but my wife books some entertainers for what she does, and I talk to a lot of those TV people. They want something in their hands. They want a DVD in their hands.
They don't
want
to go to YouTube and be looking at something.
They'll confirm things with YouTube. They might look at your hits. They might look at your other routines to see if there's something else, but I've had so many times people go, oh, we love that, that snake thing you have on your website. Can you send us a video of that? So they've already seen the video, but they want something in their hands. They want to be able to take it to this DVD player, to this office, to here and there.
Right.
And it's just something tangible versus just looking up an address on a computer. So for me, it was sending a video, a DVD with, my photo and kind of the tagline. I wanted to be able to tell the story of what this routine was in a few words. Mm-hmm. So it said, 375 spring snakes, 2 minutes of the Blue Danube Waltz, one visual comedian crazy enough to combine them. I called myself a visual comedian because, A, I know that a lot of those talk shows don't care for magicians, and, B, this wasn't magic. So I didn't want him to say, okay, here's a magician, and this isn't magic.
And nothing doesn't.
So it was visual comedy. I never used the word magic, blah, blah, blah. Sent the video, and like Paul Gertner said that his wife had said, what does Johnny Carson want, and not what do you want on, why do you want to be on the show? Everyone wants to be on the show.
Exactly.
What do they want? What do they want from you, and how can you fit into their segments? And as you see a lot on talk shows, there are segments, and if they can tie you into April Fool's Day, Halloween, Mother's Day, if you do a mother routine, all those things, those are the best ways to do it. And so when I sent to Letterman, I sent to Stupid Human Tricks, hoping that they would think my thing was better and too good for Stupid Human Tricks, but knowing that the Stupid Human Tricks producer young intern guy, and his job is to watch hundreds of Stupid Human Tricks of guys smashing beer cans on their head.
Right.
And when he found mine, it took him 5 months to do it, but when they saw my video,
there's something different.
They saw something different, they realized it was worth having on, and they realized it was too long and too big to be on Stupid Human Tricks, so they had me on as a guest. So it was a win-win.
Wow.
But had I sent a video saying, I'm an awesome magician, you should book me, I've worked all over the world, look at my promo, they probably would have thrown it in the garbage.
Right.
So, swallow your pride and send it in knowing that it's going to take a long time and knowing that you're one of thousands of people sending in videos, but if you can figure out a niche or some sort of different special story that you have. They love stories. They love, segues and making it all a segment in itself, because TV people don't like to try to figure it out on their own or don't like to think. And if you have it all ready to go and say, here it is, right here, here's my idea, you have a much better shot of it.
I've heard that before as well. Whenever that some people have pitched programs, that they have said, but can you do it? Can you wear a blue jacket when you do that or something? That's like they just can't think even that far outside the box.
Nope.
It's got to be exactly what they want at that time.
Yep.
So I see what you're saying.
It's endlessly frustrating, but I mean I'm used to it, but it still annoys the crap out of me. And I know I'm in, you know, I know when I think that way I'm wrong, but I still, when I'm at home and I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be great on Ellen, like I send all the talk shows the Spring Snake video again every April Fool's, because it's a Spring Snake, it's one of the oldest gags in the world, and every 4th of July. So they've gotten videos from me every year, and even though it hasn't been successful, I still know that
persistence will pay
persistence off. And it's those themes, like this looks like fireworks and it'll be in your studio, or this is 375 April Fool's Day jokes all in one. So it's two ideas that work well, and it's the persistence. Hasn't paid off yet, but I did Letterman, so I'm more patient now.
And that's a very creative idea and a little wonderful niche that you found over there. But, you know, in listening to your excellent lecture yesterday as well, that you had a lot of creative ideas and things that are just kind of outside the box. Where do you find your creativity?
Everywhere. Not in magic places. I don't pay attention. In fact, I kind of feel guilty sometimes. I don't pay attention to a lot of other magicians and what's on the market in the magic world. I don't really need the 1,000th version of this trick.
Right.
And magicians have heard it before, but, you know, hardware stores, toy stores, art galleries, even nurseries with plants. I get a lot of inspiration from music, but my niche and kind of what I do in my act is I do have a lot of kind of crazy contraptions and gadgets, and magic is a thread through the show. Magic is the theme, but I do really enjoy building the props, creating and building the props as much as I do performing them. So I get a lot of inspiration from just hanging out in my garage. I have a stereo system in there. I bring in my lunch. I have all the power tools. I have the oscillating fan, and I can hang out in there for hours on end building stuff.
So you're kind of like Mr. Gadget, I guess, of Magic World or the Carrot Top. Magic.
I'll take that as a compliment, I guess.
Yes.
I enjoy building, and I'm not an illusion builder by any means, and I don't build giant illusions, but I do enjoy
the phone magnet,
working
for an example.
Tools.
You know, just just a brilliant. I bought one of those a few years ago. I use it all the time. Just a fantastic idea.
Thank you. And that was necessity. I mean, it was, cell phones are extremely popular. In 2005, they were also very popular. And it was just kind of a, I don't know how it hit me, but it was something like, how do I battle cell phones? How can I, like some sort of contraption that would grab it from the audience and pull it up on stage with me, or some sort of, yo-yo thing that I could retrieve it? And then it was just kind of a magnet hit me. And I also ask all my friends, I love magnets and Velcro. Those are my two favorite things to build with. So I already had lots of magnets. So making a giant fake magnet just kind of made sense. And not to mention that the cell phone can hide behind it pretty easily, and it's self-contained and anyone can do it, and so it all kind of fell together.
I've actually used that as an intro, as an MC bit.
Sure.
Not just of also getting that, but as I turn it around, I have a piece of cardboard with the person's name on the back of the magnet. So after the phone has appeared, I turn the magnet around, and then I'll say, and tonight our opening act is going to be Eric Buss.
Right.
So they'll see that around the magnet.
Like it's a good MC bit or opening for a show, and certainly for when a cell phone rings, but it's been a nice little invention that I came up with.
Well, even just thinking outside the box, the idea that you had mentioned about the curtains being closed, of course, that Michael Finney has joked about, but and out of necessity, do you mind sharing that little tip then also?
The hotel curtains, right?
Yeah.
Well, hotel curtains never close all the way. I'm impressed with the Hilton here in St. Louis. They do close all the way. I was afraid that the joke wouldn't work in the show. But no, there's a solution in every hotel room. Typically, there is a hanger hanging in the closet, and it's a pants hanger. It's got the two clips on there. And you turn it vertical and use those clips to clip the curtains closed all the way. And it works 100% of the time, and it will seal those curtains closed, and it is dark. In fact, I just did a lecture at the PCAM, Sean Farquhar's convention, 2 weeks ago, and a guy said, hey, I liked your hanger idea. He typically travels with clothespins.
I do too. That's what I was going to say.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
But he said, I travel with clothespins, but in your honor, I used the hanger instead last night instead of my clothespin. So, it's not a magic trick or a joke or anything, but it's a
travel
solution.
Tip.
Yeah, exactly. A travel tip. There's a solution in every hotel room. So.
That's right. Well, and that goes back, I guess there's a solution to every problem. If you just kind of put your mind to it a little bit, and as Paul Gertner was talking about in his lecture, thinking outside the box, I thought it was kind of interesting that he had had a neat idea that he had used, and he was going to have some of these cards made up, but I don't know, they stopped making them. I forgot what they called the thing. It was you can kind of see through the film, like, you know, on the side of buses that you can see out, but you can't see in. They had advertising kind of a thing. Yep. And so it was a card printed on one side, but and it was a cool little trick on this film, but they ceased making those. And so out of necessity, because he already had the trick, you know, ready to go out, just slipping those in, he came up with a different idea of using the WOW gimmick, you know, for the same type of a thing. It's a brilliant little idea.
It can be painful as a magician or a performer when you have to change the method that you're comfortable with, or if you lose something or something breaks, for you to replace it. But a lot of times it comes out better.
A better idea. Yeah. I had a similar thing, many years ago that I used to publish, in the newspaper, in the classified ads back, you know, when people would read newspapers.
What is this newspaper you speak of?
I was saying, you know, tonight at Tony's restaurant, Eric Buss is going to select the three of clubs or something, and then it would be buried kind of in the classifieds. Well, someone had seen that, apparently. The secretary called in and said what's this about my boss is going to be tonight at Tony's? Said, how'd they know that or whatever? And so what I was, and that was usually the end of the show that I would have that, you know, little ad circled and everything. And so the client had called me saying that their secretary had, found out about this. And so they knew that this was supposed to be the card that was going to be selected. So the client ultimately didn't know that I knew that she knew.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
So I thought, okay, out of necessity, what am I going to do? So I ended up just using a Popeye pack, you know, of cards. So that way they selected a different card and had them sign the back of the other one, which was the force card, basically.
Oh,
and then I nailed it to a board with their signature out, so that stayed there as a running gag throughout the whole show.
Right.
Whenever they named the card, of course, which was just a random card, there was the wrong card. And I said, but the one that was in the newspaper was the one that they had actually signed, of course, that was the force card.
It works. Yep.
And so out of necessity, the point being is, you know, I kind of came up with ideas. And I think a lot of times that you do come up with a better idea, you know, under fire.
Absolutely.
Know, kind of thing.
I just, I did the IJA, the International Jugglers Association convention a few weeks ago in Rochester, Minnesota. Had a blast. Well, UPS did not get one of my road cases to me. And upon calling them, they said, nope, it'll be there Monday. And my show was Saturday. I said, Monday's not going to work. And I argued, and it was not coming to me. And so I decided, why keep throwing my energy at UPS when I can just replace what I have to replace? And it was, I had most of my act, but I didn't have the pogo stick routine. And so I had somebody drive me to Walmart.
Find a pogo stick.
And actually, I was at a jugglers convention. I was borrowing a pogo stick from one of the jugglers. But
so
at Walmart,
I got a deck of cards and a magician, and they go to jugglers, am I going to get a pogo stick?
Exactly.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
And at Walmart, all I needed was, you know, decks of cards and some glue and. But I bought two kitty litter boxes, which is similar size to the box that I bounced through in the real routine.
Right.
And so I talked to my wife, and she, you know, she was back home, but she was freaking out about UPS not getting my stuff to me, and what am I going to do, and I'm stressed out. And I said, sweetie, I'm fine. I get to build stuff in my hotel room to replace what I don't have. Like,
yeah.
I'm this
home.
Is going to be fine. Yeah. I get to wing it tonight. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a challenge, and it was fun. Retrospect, you know, nothing new came out of that situation, because all I was trying to do was replace props so I could do the same routine.
Yeah.
I wasn't having to reinvent, you know, any sort of things. I already knew where I was going and just had to replace some props. It was an interesting show. It worked. It was fine. It was kind of fun to build, kind of frustrating, but it, you know, when you take a step back, exactly, when you take a step back and realize it's just a magic show and nobody's going to die and it's all fine, it doesn't matter.
It's all fun. Right. And you feel much stronger in thinking, gosh, I really can do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, the name of my podcast is The Magic Word. So I'm going to end this over here then with you of asking you, what is your favorite magic word?
My favorite magic word.
What is the magic word of the day?
I can do it. That's three words. Can I use three words?
I can do it. That's four words.
Four. I'm not very good at math. There's three kinds of people in this world. Those who are good at math and those who are not.
There you go. Excellent. That was Eric Buss over here. Thank you very, very much, Eric. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
And for now, this is Scotty out. Well, it's Saturday night and time for the last evening show. And I'm out here in the lobby getting ready to be seated here shortly. But who do I run into but Chuck and Joni Lear? Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hi, Scott. Good to see y'all. Good to see everybody here.
And did you notice the y'all, when he said y'all? That means this is a buddy from Texas. Now, that you guys had moved here from Dallas, Texas. Of course, that he is, Chuck is the dean of
Dallas Magic Club. Yep.
For the Society of American Magicians there.
Yep. And I'm excited because we're here in St. Louis, and the last time I actually attended this particular Magic Jubilee was in 1987 when I brought home to Dallas, Texas, my very first Magic trophy, which was for first place for close-up. 1987 Union Station, and we're back. It took a long time, but we're back.
And you're back here permanently because now you live in St. Louis.
We live in St. Louis. Medical reasons, we're up here, and we miss all of our friends in Texas very, 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 very much, but everything is going by the numbers now, and all is well, and we're excited to be Missourians now.
And let me say that Joni's looking great, by the way, for those of you guys who haven't seen her in a while, that she's standing here and doing well, and glad to hear you had some good diagnosis recently from the doctors then as well. So
yeah, they are telling me my cancer's going into remission, and I'm just loving it here. I'm having a great time.
Fantastic.
Getting stronger all the time. So.
But you haven't been to the rest of the convention. You just came in for the evening show here this evening.
Joni's still sort of recuperating, and we can only handle a couple of hours at a time. So we'll get back into it. Maybe TAOM in Dallas in a few years.
Well, next year, you know, we're going to be having TAOM, of course, in Houston. And Danny Garcia is going to be the president. So
I think it'll be a little bit longer than that before we can handle it.
Okay. So. Well, you know, the next big convention will be here in St. Louis, as you know, with the combined IBM and SAM convention.
What exciting
2014,
news.
Yeah. We were talking with Sean Farquhar. Are you going to be involved with that? Have you gotten involved with the local club here a
Not
little bit?
Yet.
Okay.
And the reason is because every time they have every time they have a magic meeting, it conflicts with a medical appointment.
Yeah.
But eventually, all of that stuff will be behind us, and we'll be able to participate in magic just as well as we did it in Dallas.
And I want to just kind of visit that real quickly, because some of those people perhaps who are listening over in England or in Spain or someplace may not know exactly what you have been involved with as far as the SAM and how integral of a component that you as a couple have been, you know, to the magic community in Texas in general, as far as being like a past president of TAOM like myself and other things. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about your history.
Well, Joni sucked me into this. Joni decided to be a volunteer coordinator, and it was the very first volunteer coordinator for SAM that they ever had. And then she decided that she was going to be an RVP, regional vice president. So she talked me into being the volunteer coordinator. And then she decided that she was going to be secretary, the national secretary for the SAM. So naturally, I had to be the RVP for the SAM for the Texas area. And then she got sick while she was the secretary, the national secretary. So guess who became the national secretary for the SAM after her? And then finally, the catching up of all the sicknesses and stuff like that, I sort of had to cut back and take care of Joni, so we passed the baton on to others. But we loved every minute of what we did and enjoyed it very much.
As far as Dallas goes, he did the Wizard Scroll for the club. He's the dean of the Dallas Club, and I had 33 years as the secretary treasurer of the Dallas Club.
33 years unbroken for Joni Lear, secretary, and Chucky Lear is right now, until they fire me, I am still the dean of the Dallas Magic Clubs.
Still a strong component. And also have won several awards and everything at different conventions and whatnot as well.
This is the thing. I kept on performing in contests, never winning, never winning, never winning. I came to St. Louis and I won. And in the car on the way back home, I told Joni, I said, I finally broke into this. I finally have the confidence. This is going to be the first. And we went to the very next TAOM, and I finally got my first TAOM close-up magic.
Same year,
1987. And it was in Corpus Christi.
That's when you beat me.
Yeah. Okay.
I was in that contest.
Okay.
Remember that.
Okay. And that was it. And then I picked up a few after that. And, in fact, we got Paul Siegel, Uncle Paul Siegel, and Joni Lear, and Carol Ann Siegel, and myself all shared the stage trophy 1 year for a very successful presentation.
I remember that comedy. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Very funny.
Very, very good.
The trash can and everything was that?
Trash can,
the park bench or something?
It was a grocery cart.
Yes.
Big disappearance in a grocery cart.
Yeah, very funny. I recall, so many years ago.
Good time.
This has been a good convention, I tell you. This is my third year of attending this, and it is small, so it's intimate enough that you can kind of spend time, and it's a genuinely friendly convention, certainly.
You bet.
And the level of talent is just incredible, I tell you.
Yeah.
It's been really good. Sorry you missed the close-up this afternoon. I mean, gosh, it was Richard Turner. There was Paul Gertner, Simon Lovell, Dan Harlan, Arthur Stead had performed. I'm missing somebody else.
I want to say that I was very fortunate, and Joni was very fortunate. We actually talked to Bud Dietrich and Bill Pitts and Ruth Pitts today.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah. And, of course, I talked about Dietrich last evening, and he was one of the originators who had co-founded it.
He's the man. The godfather.
That's right. Starting to see this over here, so we'll go and have a seat. Good seeing you guys. Thanks very much for being part of this.
Thank you, Scott.
Joni, Chuck, we'll see you guys later. Oh, by the way, the name of this podcast is called The Magic Word. Let me ask you, what is your magic word? What's the magic word? Magic word and win
$25. Oh, come on. You haven't forgotten.
How about yours then, Joni?
What's mine lately? Thank you, God.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All righty. And with that, it's Scotty out. And so the Midwest Magic Jubilee finally came to a close as things started winding down after, I can't say after midnight. Well, it certainly was after midnight. It went into the wee hours in the morning. I see a lot of people over there. Oh, Paul Gertner holding court on the floor, looks like. Andrew Goldenhirsch and some of the guys peering over their shoulder. A bunch of stuff going on still at the bar. Bar usually closes up about 1 o'clock here. So a little bit after that, they'll probably start clearing out. Looks like a lot of people have also left here. Who have driven in from the surrounding suburbs. So anyhow, not quite as crowded as it has been the last few nights. So some of the people who may have been locals who stayed here the last few nights must have gone home after the show as well. But it was a very good show, great evening show, with emceed then by Chris Raymond. And Eric Buss closed the show with his snake act, Spring Snakes, very funny. Paul Gertner did a great show, some excerpts from his one-man show that he does, as well as Sean Farquhar doing some bits from his FISM award-winning act. And then we also had a opening act of let me see, who was it? I guess it was Paul who had opened. But they had the announcements of the winners of the contests, and close-up went to Steve Finkelstein, and the stage went to Don Weiberg. And Don Weiberg was on the evening bill, and he followed. It was Sean came on then first, and then had Paul, and then it was then with Don Weiberg, and then Eric Buss with Chris kind of doing some in-between bits, and it was all very good. Great show, great convention. Everything went very well, and dealers were open after the show, and so make some last-minute sales and some other deals to be done, so that way they wouldn't have to carry so much back. Some of these guys were all, I think, packing up to head out to Vegas on tomorrow morning. Well, or this morning. It's early right now. In fact, my flight just leaves in a few hours, and I'll be heading off to Las Vegas to Magic Live, and I'll be
reporting some podcasts from there. And so, anyhow, it has been just a whole heck of a lot of fun. Hope you guys have enjoyed listening to this. Thanks a lot for sticking with me and for downloading this, and hope to see you some more. And for now, Scotty out.